Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome back to All Things Blue Shirts. Mark Williams from All Things Rangers, and I'm here currently right now with a brand new member of All Things Rangers as well, Kevin. And sorry, Kevin Murray, I just realized I said my last name as well. We're going to get stalked now. We are waiting on our third member, Scott, from Blue Shirt Nation to join us. He had to go to the hospital. We hope he's okay. But he's had a little bit of a break last couple weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, he should be okay. He should be okay.
Okay, let's not like people seem very dire, but hopefully he's just in and out.
But we've had kind of a busy couple weeks since the last time we were able to have a podcast. One of the things that happened was our Rangers went on a little bit of a run. And it was so shocking to everybody. Yes. And it was so shocking last week when they lost to Vancouver that everybody gathered in New York City to yell about it. That's what I've been told. But
yeah, I hear people are marching up and down Fifth Avenue about it.
Right now, that's actually what it's about. It's about the New York Rangers. So, Kev, the team's been flying under the radar. There's been a lot that happened the last couple weeks. Off the top of your head, what are you thinking?
I can't believe we've scored this many goals. And I know that the Rangers have been shooting very high right now. I think they're shooting about 12 or 13%, which isn't going to happen all year. But, I mean, watching the games, they've been a lot of fun to watch. And just even just watch them on a nightly basis, I don't ever feel like they're getting outplayed severely. It's just they seem to be getting a lot of high-quality chances. There seem to be a lot of passes going across the ice. There seem to be a lot of guys in the slot with their sticks on the ice. They seem to be doing a lot of good things that generate these, you know, high-quality scoring chances. And even though they are shooting a little higher than usual, and that's contributing to this 5 or 6 goals a night outburst they've been on the past few weeks, it's been really fun. It's been a really fun hockey team to watch, and that's kind of nice early in the season when, you know, you're not playing, you know, some of your rivals or you're not in a playoff push. It's just nice to have some fun, kind of wide-open games to watch right now.
Well, extending back to what you were saying, to what you're saying about the goals, it's impressive what they're doing. Nick Kiprios recently, this weekend when they were playing Calgary, said that this team moves the puck better than any team that he's seen in a long time. And when you talk about their goal output, they are averaging 4.06 goals per game. And that is, of course, tops in the NHL. and it's tops of the NHL by 0.6 of a goal. It is not even close. And we could try to pick apart their competition of who they've played during that time span. But the teams in that time span that we've been off the air, they've went up against teams like Boston, Tampa Bay, St. Louis, Edmonton, twice, Boston again, and Calgary. Everybody scores on Calgary. But, I mean, they're teams that they're not exactly either easy to score on or easy to play against. Usually, like a team like Edmonton, they'll put the puck in your net so much, you don't have a chance to play offense against them. And the Chinks have been in the armor a little bit for Edmonton, as I'm gushing about them. But they've been fantastic. And guys rotating in and out of the lineup, we still haven't seen the best from a lot of players.
Yeah, we haven't seen the best, but I'd say as of now, the best game the Rangers played this year so far is probably that game against St. Louis. I mean, St. Louis has had a little bit of an up-and-down road so far this year, but a Ken Hitchcock team that you always think of as very sound defensively, that doesn't give up a lot of chances. I mean, that game where the Rangers beat them 5-0, they really seemed to just stick it to them all night. I mean, they were in their zone the whole time. They were getting quality chances, and they did give up some quality chances in that game. I mean, Henrik did make some very impressive saves on the way to that shutout, but that was probably the win that impressed me the most over the past couple of weeks.
Specifically, in that one game, the save he made on Robbie Fabry, I believe the Rangers were only up 1-0 at the moment, and that was I think it might have been 2-0. Either way, that's one of those things where you're just like, oh yeah, Henrik is one of the best goalies in the world. Sometimes you need to be reminded about that. Because after all, there's a lot of people that want to try to throw dirt on Henrik Lundqvist. And, I mean, right now there's one goalie specifically that, let's see, when the Rangers are going to see him, they're not going to see him for a while, probably into January, and that's Carey Price. And Carey Price's track record, he's due for an injury sometime soon, but he is playing lights out, and that's one of those tests that I want to see the Rangers go up against soon, because their test against Tampa was flawless, 6-1 victory, with of all people, Michael Grabner having a hat trick, and they're going to get Pittsburgh at the end of the month, and or actually even next week.
Next week, twice, back-to-back.
Back-to-back. Thanksgiving week that the Rangers are going to see Florida, Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh. And I think that's the next test for this team.
Yeah, then they follow that up with Friday afternoon after Thanksgiving against the Flyers. So that's really a big week for them. Just, you know, you play some, you know, Flyers obviously are a team that's a little bit bigger, gives them a little bit of an issue on size-wise. Florida and Pittsburgh obviously are two of the better offensive teams in the league and, you know, are probably two of the teams that match up best with the Rangers' speed and will be actually able to hang with them the whole time. So that would be an interesting week to go through, see some maybe the more top-quality competition. The Rangers haven't done well, though, right now out in Western Canada. And even though they played Edmonton and Calgary, it's still nice to go on the road, you know, go out to the West Coast and get a couple wins, especially after losing to Vancouver last week. Hopefully they can take care of business again tonight. You don't want to lose to a team like Vancouver twice.
Well, one of the reasons why we didn't have a show last week is because Kevin and I were in attendance for the game. And, you know, it looked like they were just going to kind of sleepwalk their way through that one. And Vancouver stormed them in the third period. Henrik was supposed to have the night off. Didn't happen. And he lucked into game over. But specifically from that game, and really the last four games, is the work of Pavel Buchnevich. And we're really seeing – now, he's going to be out tonight, again, with back spasms. But he's really starting to show that promise that while it's nice, we'll talk about one player that's playing well right now, he's going to definitely ascend through that lineup throughout the season.
Yeah, Buchnevich really has – he's impressed me. I mean, and also just on every line that he's been on. I mean, with his injuries, he's kind of got shuffled around a little unfairly at times. Not even unfairly, just the fact that he's been in and out of the lineup and other guys slide into different spots, and then when he comes back, he's in a different spot. But on every line he's been on, he's made that line better. And then that line instantly comes back, and whether he's playing with Zibanejad and Kreider or he's playing on the fourth line, you know, so-called fourth line.
Yeah,
I don't even know what to, I think it's unfair to call it the fourth line at this point. I mean, the fourth line has that stigma of, you know, oh, there's just some giant guys out throwing elbows around, but the Rangers really don't have that this year. And that, well, we said that before the season, we said it a couple weeks ago, and that's really the biggest change, I think, this year that has led to some of these output and goals, that other teams just can't match up with them. They can't roll four lines against the Rangers because they're gonna leave a line left uncovered. They don't have the speed or the matchup players to, you know, stop them.
Which is sort of why you kind of want to see a game like the Vancouver game, because I always kind of talk about the measuring stick games where you're going to go up against a team you're going to see in the playoffs, like a Tampa Bay, like a Pittsburgh, like a Washington, and you want to see how they're going to match up early on in the season or even late in the season. You also want to see those letdown games. You want to see how they're going to be when they don't have it. Because last week they basically played into Vancouver's game. If I remember correctly, shots on goal at the end of the second period was 18-14. And the Rangers were the ones being outshot. That was unheard of for this team for the first month of the season. Usually they're the ones that are – peppering the goalie with more rubber than what you see on the Long Island Expressway. And it's that the other night in Edmonton, when they didn't have it, they had a great first period in Edmonton. And then their second two periods, they, I won't use the words were dominated, but they didn't have their strongest game. I don't think Ranta really stepped up for the rest of that game.
Yeah, I think there have been, I mean, while we have been raving about their ability to score, like we said, they're not going to shoot 12-13% for the entire year. I mean, that's just not sustainable. And it'll be interesting to see how they respond a little bit, maybe when they go on a little bit of just a normal streak or even a cold streak. We saw some signs of it in that game against Boston, too, a couple of weeks ago, where they played about 30, 40 minutes of not-so-great hockey, but they got a couple timely goals and, you know, was able to put the pressure on Boston and just hold that one out. We've been seeing the signs over the last week, week and a half, that maybe, you know, the possession numbers are starting to trend down a little bit, and some of that has to do with just playing back-to-backs or, you know, being up on the score sheet so early on. But there definitely are some causes for concern, and while I think that the team is definitely in a better position than I expect them to be before the season started, and they're in a better position than they were last year, I think the defense is starting to show some of those trouble signs. I mean, McDonough was an absolute monster the first month of the season, first few weeks of the season. And the last couple of weeks, it really seems that, you know, Girardi and Holden, no matter who's been playing with him, has really been dragging him down a little bit. It's tough to expect so much out of your one guy when you only have that one dependable defenseman to play all those minutes. And Girardi and Holden just, I don't know. I don't know if they're going to be able to survive a whole season with the two of them in the lineup every night. I'd really like to see Clendenin get in there a little bit more. I know he was in the lineup the other night on the second half of back-to-back playing, you know, as a seventh defenseman. I don't understand why they couldn't have rotated him in when the team did look a little tired, but that's AV's usage for you once again.
Yeah, but I think one of the things is you're getting – this is going to sound like such a terrible statement, but they're getting good enough play out of Holden and Girardi, I think. Is good enough going to help you in April? We'll see about that. And I think one thing that they're being smart with Dan Girardi is kind of giving him rest. Dan Girardi, to his detriment over the last couple of years, his work ethic has been a problem. And it's not that his work ethic is bad as a person. It's that he's so much of a warrior and he wants to be on the ice. And when he's banged up, he never gets off the ice. And he's just – the injuries then start to snowball. You look at his play late in the season last year and early in the Stanley Cup playoffs, he just wasn't up to snuff. I thought it was the beginning of the end. And he had a good game five, but it was Pittsburgh's series to lose by that time. And you need to give a guy like Dan Girardi some rest, because he's going to be physical, and everything he does is, if he's fresh, he's much better from fresh. And Holden's been a bit of a surprise. Obviously the coaching staff really believes in him, and hopefully he'll keep it up. That's kind of where you dog ear and say that's where you're going to get to have to improve late in the season. But going further into their defense, Brady Shea has really been stepping up his game. He has been everywhere, intercepting pucks, making great passes. His outlet passes have been fantastic. And now you're starting to see him be more of a four or a three, and that can help out McDonough, who's played a great season so far, and very aggressive too. Anytime you ever put a guy in the same breath as Brian Leetch, that's rarefied air in New York Rangers history. And he had that, it was an 8-game assist streak?
Six, maybe? Yeah. Six, yeah.
Unfortunately, I didn't have my notes in front of me, so.
That's okay. We won't hold it against you. Yeah, I think Shea's been very good. And the thing about Shea, it's just to kind of tie the 2 points about the defense together, is what do we love about Shea? We love that he makes that breakout pass. We love that he gets in the passing lanes. We love that he has his head looking up the ice. And while at times he may not be perfect in his own zone and they may give up some chances, I mean, that's part of the learning curve for a young defenseman, but we love that he's trying to get the puck up the ice. And I don't understand then why Clendenning, who those are his similar strong attributes, is not given the same chance to play on this team. And I'm not saying that he should be playing every night. I know that Holden's going to get his time. I know that Girardi is going to get his time. But I don't understand the situation why they all can't play, 50 or 60 games to keep everybody fresh. And Clendenning would be a real bigger spark to that offense to, help generate even more offense, or just to keep generating offense when the shooting percentage does go down. Because he's another guy where he's always looking for that pass. His head's always up the ice. He can move the puck really quickly, either up the boards or up the ice. And I just don't get why all these things we admire about one player, it's like, oh no, Clendenning's got to sit out because we got to get Eric Holden in there, when Holden can barely get past the puck 10 feet out of his own zone.
Nick Holden. I was trying to remember who Eric Holden is for a second. But that's, you got a good point with that, because Clendenning, I think what was dooming him earlier in the season was Clendenning had some bad giveaways. Specifically, we talked about it on the last podcast, the one that he gave away that led to the Lars Eller goal in Washington. That was sort of what was indicative. But then Clendenning came back the very next period, got his first point as a New York Ranger on the Brendan Peary goal. So Clendenning's going to get his time. That's why I'm not freaking
really
out about Clendenning.
Really? He was last night, and he didn't get a shift. So how is he going to get his time? Why not? Why not when you have some defensive rotate them in?
He
was there. He was ready to play.
He didn't have the game plan and everything else.
You're telling me that he's not sitting in on meetings and in every practice, and he doesn't know what the Rangers are trying to do on a nightly basis because he came in the game the last second? That's why AV wasn't going to play him?
Okay, touche. You got me on that one.
The fact of the matter is he was there. They could have easily rotated seven guys, keep everyone a little fresher on the back-to-back to play in the third game of four nights on a road trip. It would have been very simple to get Clendenning 14 minutes, 12 minutes last night. And AV just said, No, I have no use for you. You can sit there. And that really bothers me.
But we've seen AV do that with other people. Dylan McElrath, the recently traded Dylan McElrath, because he left the organization, he's still alive. And he's done that several times. And echoing what you're saying, it bothers you, because the only game the Rangers won in the playoffs last year, Dylan McElrath was in the lineup and was very good in that lineup. And that's something that they're going to have to look at when the season goes on. But going back to the forwards, I said going on, the defense is going to be a work in progress because even though I love the way the defense has played so far, you'll, of course, always correct me on Holden and Girardi. But I think their forwards are incredibly deep, and that's the reason why you can always look at these guys. So the goal differential for this team right now is a plus 29. That's 10 better than Montreal, who's the second best in the league. And they're just going to continue to just pepper the puck, put it in the net. And if that's what keeps the pressure off of Henrik, I'm all for it.
Yeah, they really have done a very good job of also going up early, which does relieve a lot of pressure and does, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, create a little bit of a, you know, shot differential backlash because, you know, when you're up a couple goals, the other team's obviously going to come at you a lot harder, but you're in a much better position. And that's something that has impressed me with this team. I like I've said, you know, already, I really hope that when the shooting goes down a little bit that we're not seeing these games quickly turn the other way. The Rangers are still going to need to find new ways to generate offense.
Well, the one thing you can say is that the attack has been very balanced. Every line has got double-digit goal total for the line itself. Obviously, players have been moved around. And I believe the third unit was leading the way with 19 goals that have been scored. And if they could keep up the balanced attack, because I think Pittsburgh's kind of really shown you're going to win more in the playoffs with your third and your fourth line playing well more than your first and your second unit, because you expect those, and they're the ones that they're going to game plan against. I mean, the KVH line last year dominated, because who the hell was matching up against them? Yeah.
Yeah, and last year, one of the guys that killed the Rangers the most was Matt Cullen. I mean, like, at that point when you're so tired that your fourth line has Matt Cullen on and is killing you, then you just don't stand a chance.
Hey, hell, Matt Cullen definitely killed the Rangers a lot more than he did when he was wearing a blue shirt. No, I kid. Matt Cullen was actually a pretty good player for the Rangers when he was here that one year.
He was fine. He was another one of the. He's on the long list of bad power play quarterbacks.
Oh, yes, that is true. Amazing how ever since number two took off that jersey, you haven't had a power play quarterback.
It's shocking that we lost one of the top 10 defensemen of all time, and we haven't been able to get another one of those. Who would have thought? Once in a generation player just didn't grow on trees. God damn it. Oh, silly us.
Well. Again, you know, who thought that? But you look at the Rangers, just looking across the division at some other numbers. Like I was talking about goal differential before. Oddly enough, the second best team in the Metropolitan Division in goal differential is the Columbus Blue Jackets, sitting in fifth place right now. Right, they've only played 13 games. They're plus 13 right now, and that's
they put up that
spot. That does help. That does help. But that's still better than New Jersey at plus 5, Washington at plus 3, and Pittsburgh at plus 8.
Yeah, Pittsburgh's looked pretty good, though, from what I've seen. Washington's had a little bit of an up-and-down start, but even though they were winning all those games, Pittsburgh, to me, looks like the best team. And the team the Rangers are going to most have to be worried about.
I 100% agree, because while New Jersey's going to be competitive, I think. We got to wait for the Flyers to find their stride. Who knows whether or not Steve Mason is back to being a disappointing goaltender. Can we write off the Islanders yet?
I wrote them off when the season started pretty much, but I mean, I just don't understand any of the moves they made this summer. I couldn't wrap my head around it. I've never thought Capuano was a good coach. I am really convinced at this point that Gard Snow isn't a good GM and that don't even want to play there at all. I mean, talk about an organization in real disarray right now. I mean, I know it doesn't look that bad on the ice, but I mean, if John Tavares walks after next season, like, what's left? What are they ever going to do again? How are they going to build their team up?
That's sort of what I'm wondering right now. Had a discussion with a friend of mine about basically John Tavares deserves better. Even as a Ranger fan and a Ranger pundit, I'm telling you, John Tavares deserves better, and it's still just one of those things that it shake your head. It should have been going after bigger free agents or trying to maintain some of the ones that they had. Andrew Ladd has been a bust. Andrew Ladd is right now looks like Jason Bay did on New York Mets. Hey, great idea, but it's not working. And, I mean, you got working like guys like Jason Chimera hasn't done much. You know, a lot of these guys, if they're scoring their first goal as an Islander or first goal of the season, Strom and Nelson haven't done much. I don't know what they were thinking when they put this team together. Like the now going back to the Flyers, who are sitting in sixth place but are at 500 right now, that team scares me because they got guys that could play offensively. If they patch that game, that team together, we talked at the beginning of the year, they're going to be a power play team. They're going to attack you on the power play, and that's where they're going to hurt you. Even strength is where they're going to be a little bit weaker, but they're still going to be that dangerous. I still expect them to have a top five power play at the end of the year. They're going to be very top heavy with their scoring, and I worry about trying to face them later on in the year, say, when they're stronger and they got their game going. Question is, who's their goaltender? That's a big question. Kev, I lost you. You're mute. You're mute.
There we go.
There we go.
I completely agree with you that, you know, even that they might not figure out who the goaltender guy is and have that one solid, reliable guy, but they're not going to, just like the Rangers aren't going to shoot team percent all season, even if the Flyers are having goalie trouble, their save percentage isn't going to be 87% all year, which is what it's sitting at right now. If they get that up even just a few ticks to a little bit even below average, that team's goal differential is going to shoot up in a second. I mean, because their power play has been incredibly good so far this year. I don't know exactly where it ranks. I think it might be in second or third, but it's been really impressive to watch. Yeah, they're in second overall for the power play.
Yeah, because you got a guy like Shane Gostisbehere back there, and the talent they're going to throw up front. Now, as much as I think the New York Rangers have plenty of talent that they could throw up front, it's not even close, so to speak, of how great the talent is as a whole. Because they're going to throw out Gostisbehere. They're going to throw out, like, even Mark Streit is a valuable commodity on there. Simmons in front of the net. Shen in front of the net. And then you got Voracek and Giroux going back and forth. And everything got solidified as soon as Gostisbehere really got featured. So that's why they're going to scare me later on. You look at Columbus. What if John Tortorella finally got them to click? And he's been riding a lot of guys hard. It's going to be interesting on that because you got guys like Brendan Dubinsky, who basically he was riding like a stallion. I am going way into sexual innuendo on this without even realizing. He's been riding him, you know, going to the whip too often with them. Could it work? It can. I mean, he did it with the 2011-2012 Rangers with Marian Gaborik, but
I've already written off the Columbus Blue Jackets. I have no idea what they're trying to do over there. I have no idea what direction they're taking, if they're rebuilding, if they're not rebuilding, if Tortorella is the coach who's going to lead this yes or not, maybe rebuild. I don't know. I don't see any way they compete for a whole season. I just think this division is too good. I mean, between the Rangers, Pittsburgh, Washington, New Jersey looks a little better. I mean, because Corey Schneider's, you know, a top five goalie, and You know, Taylor Hall's made them very good this year. Philadelphia would think is going to bounce back, and even the Islanders might bounce back a little. I don't see any room for Columbus to be a contender.
It's one of those things. I can't imagine them being a contender either right now. I don't think they're ready for it. They are getting more talent out of their forwards, and it's going to be they're going to be a better team, I think, than what we've seen the last couple of years.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they're a bottom five lottery team. I think as the season progresses, that's not going to change. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't put any stock in John Tortorella as a coach or in that defensive situation or anything, really.
All right. So what do you think is the more interesting more interesting thing or more surprising thing you could say early on in the New York Rangers season? Our leading goal scorer on the team is
Michael Grabner.
He's got 10 goals so far. Now, that puts him second in the NHL behind Patrick Laine. Now, what's more fascinating? That he's leading the Rangers with 10 goals. The guy that's leading the Rangers and tied for the league lead in game-winning goals is Dan Girardi.
I'm going to go with Girardi to being tied for game-winning goals is weirder just because that's a real happenstance of luck. The fact he scored 3 goals and all 3 of them have been game-winning goals, and I'm pretty sure 2 of them just deflected off his legs and went in the net, and they weren't even off his stick. So that's I'll classify it as weirder. But Grabner scoring 10 goals has just been wonderful, hasn't it? I mean, the guy who the Islander fans and Toronto fans probably would tell you had hands of stone, which really wasn't always the case. I mean, his goals per 60 minutes of ice time his whole career has been pretty good. It's always been pretty consistent. He's just a guy that's always been a little underutilized. You know, he got pigeonholed a little bit in, you know, that defensive forward kind of role or played on teams that maybe just didn't score a lot of goals. But he's really flourished playing with, you know, real playmakers, you know, with Hayes or with JT Miller and Nash. And, you know, he's been able to get the puck and he's been able to use the speed. He gets in the, I mean, the thing that impresses me the most is that he gets in the passing lane so quickly. I mean, these teams think they can make these passes across the ice and he just jumps the lane so fast. And before you know it, he's off to the races. There's just no stopping him at that point.
And it's amazing because I'm still maintaining this position of Grabner is here to be a fourth line player that can put the puck in the net, maybe score 12 goals. Take that. I don't want to refer to it as the Victor Stahlberg position from last year, but because Stahlberg certainly used his size more than Grabner's going to, or Grabner's going to use his speed more than Stahlberg did. And with Buchnevich ascending through the lineup, and again, he will ascend. Grabner's going to be back to that role, a sort of lesser role, but it's still going to be fine because that's what the Rangers' plan is for him. Right now, he's filling in well second line, third line, and who knows, maybe even have to do the first line. But we're asking Michael Grabner to do it and not Jesper Fast. And right now, it's paying dividends.
Yeah, and the thing also that impresses me about Grabner is I kind of thought of him as that Carl Hagelin replacement kind of player. But I think when Carl Hagelin would score goals, it usually would be generated off of forechecks and, you know, weird turnovers that he would use his speed to try and swoop in and steal the puck in the offensive zone, where Grabner really plays very solid defense and really has almost like a playmaker's head on his shoulder where he gets in those passing lanes or he puts himself in the right position on the ice, you know, to take the shot when other people can get him the puck. He's always, you know, has his head up looking for the puck. And when the puck's coming across the ice, he seems to really be able to jump those lanes and get it. And it's been really nice to watch this. I can't believe that he's actually scored 10 goals. I mean, there's still a very good chance he might finish the year with 16, but at this part of the year, there really isn't anything more you can ask for him. And he's been great on the penalty kill. We should probably mention that, too, that the Ranger penalty kill has been much improved this year. I'm pretty sure it's 11th in the league right now. It's over 80%. And he's one of the big reasons because of that.
Yes. And I'm going to give you that penalty kill statistic. But I try to remember who's the one that said last week, I think it was Derek Stepan, said Michael Grabner is the best penalty killer he's ever seen, which is alarming because Derek Stepan himself is a pretty good penalty killer. But, I mean, the Rangers have had several penalty killers.
His defense, he can't watch himself.
The Rangers have had several penalty killers. Just in Derek Stepan's time, they were pretty good. I mean, Artemi Nisimov was a good penalty killer. Obviously, Dominic Moore. At the very beginning of Stepan's career, nope, he missed player bets. I was wrong. There's been a lot of good penalty killers. They're, by the way, 83.7 right now for the PK. And that puts them at exactly number 11. Good call, Kevin.
You know, I did some of my homework today.
Yes. Well, 21.6, by the way, is their power play numbers, which their power play has been a little disappointing. But it's going to go up because, as Joe Micheletti said the other night, you're going to see Mika Zibanejad. I think it's been a little bit disappointing. It could certainly do better.
It's ninth in the league, right?
It is ninth in the league. Five, and then went back down to 14. They've been sort of notorious about going on runs, but you look at the way that their power play has been going, their two point men that they use for these one-timers, both Zibanejad and Peary, they've been a little bit dry lately. And Zibanejad is going to break out. I think that's coming. As a matter of fact, I think it's going to come tonight. I don't know why. It's just one of my gut feelings. And
like that.
I would not be surprised if he pops two tonight.
There you go. How about some predictions? Look at that. Isn't that fun?
All right. Hey, we're going to take a break.
I think it's been disappointing? I mean, I don't think it's been, spectacular or blowing me away or anything, but I'm very happy with the output. I think with Kreider, I think, is one of the guys that really makes the power play go. But, you know, his presence on the net, and he hasn't been there. So, I don't know. I think it's been pretty good. I think, you know, it would look a little bit better if we got Clendenning in there, too. But, you know, hey, what do I know?
Well, I'll tell you what. The guy that's done really well for the power play, and again, he's a rookie, so it comes and goes. Jimmy Vesey's done a great job for that. And the renewed confidence of Kevin Hayes has also been a key factor. But we're going to take a break for a minute just to relax. I also got to play a video for you guys or a soundbite for you soon because the Rangers had a big occasion that happened last night when no game was on. Talk to you about that in a minute. All right, we're back again. Like I said, the New York Rangers had huge news over the weekend that was even off the ice, and we're just going to play a quick clip to let you know what that is.
5 seconds. There's one man back, and it's Brown. Boy is going to go ahead with quick hands. McTavish will have to nullify it. Here it is. The waiting is over. The New York Rangers on a Stanley Cup champion. And this one will last a lifetime. No more person. This is unbelievable.
Now, unfortunately for my younger broadcast partner on here, were you able to fully appreciate that? How old were you at the time? You were 4 or 5?
It took place a week after my 4th birthday. So, no,
right.
I did not appreciate that.
Oh,
the first time I really remember watching the Rangers was the Gretzky run in 97? Right? 97? Is that right? 98?
There you go. But, Before we get too far into detail on this, the reason why we played that clip is because Sam Rosen went to the Hockey Hall of Fame as the Foster Hewitt Award of Excellence, and or Foster Hewitt Excellence
Award. We apologize for playing that clip like inside a paper cup and through a string across the interwebs here, but
folks, we're sorry. For some reason, I could not get the clip onto our player. So it had to go through my headset, which is low quality, and through me, which is also low quality as well. Or at least that's what every ex-girlfriend has said. Okay.
Yeah,
thank
you. Gonna pop instantrimshot.com next week.
But I mean, for every Ranger fan, starting from my generation down to my little cousins. That or even nephews, that Sam Rosen has been the voice of the New York Rangers for 30, 35 years. And it's a great story, whatever you can think about, just a little kid that went into Madison Square Garden and watched Andy Bathgate play. And then he gets to call not only Ranger games, but the first Stanley Cup that they had post World War II. So it's, I still maintain, by the way, Kev, his greatest call, if you ever got to watch the game in its entirety, was right before that play, Steve Larmer cleared the zone, and Sam screams out, "That's it, that's it, 54 years of curses are over, no more 1940, and it was a great, great thing. And then Kevin Collins called icing for no reason, that John Davidson was just absolutely livid. He's going, why'd he call icing? Corey,
that actually is one of my
favorite
traditions of the playoffs is the referees that call icing to the letter of the law when there are under 10 seconds left of games. And they still do that today. It was like, oh, no, we're going to wave that off all game. Then now like he's like down there skating next to the puck and someone, he's like, oh, no, we'll call that one icing. There's 8 seconds left. Gotta make it exciting.
Well, you know what? There's an expression that I have. I'll use the baseball one, correlate to hockey as well. There's such a thing called an 0-1 strike and a 3-0 strike, where if you're standing there with a bat on your shoulder, you can basically throw the ball under the plate. And if the umpire calls it a strike, fine. But he's not calling that a strike on 3-2 or the first pitch of the at-bat. There's no chance. Same thing in hockey. There's a penalty in the first period. There's a penalty in the third period. Both of them could be the same exact penalty. One's called, one they let go. And I'm totally fine with that because circumstances dictate that you got to have a let-them-play philosophy sometimes. And not everything is fresh out of NHL 17 on your Xbox where you actually can have a robot referee. Referees do think. So I'm okay with that.
Unless they're named Tim Peel, in which case he doesn't think at all.
There's so many referees that we could say that about, but we'll go with Tim Peel.
He's easy to beat up on.
Now,
but yeah, back to Sam Rosen. Sam Rosen really has been the voice of the Rangers for more than a generation at this point, two generations. I mean, he's worked with legendary partners, you know, throughout his career. He's there almost every single night. The Ranger fans really should be very lucky to have him. He's enthusiastic. He calls everything correctly, which, you know, if you watch some of the other elite, if you have the NHL Center Ice package, you know, it's really a great luxury to have someone that actually knows what's going on the ice. And, you know, he really did deserve this award. And if you look at some of the other names that he's in there with, it, you know, he really does belong.
It's, and going back to what you were saying just now with some of the legends that he's worked with, the amazing thing about Sam Rosen is the chemistry he immediately developed with whoever the booth analyst is. Now, we could just focus on the Rangers broadcast, which was, I believe, was Phil Esposito when he started. Then
that's right.
It was then John Davidson, who, for my money, is the greatest analyst in the history of hockey. Then you have Davidson leaves, Joe Micheletti comes in, and it's not just an informative thing. It's not even just a professionalism thing. But it is sort of like a very welcoming booth that both guys just can have so much color and information, joyfulness about it. And it's not even just secluded to him as a hockey announcer, because when you hear him do NFL Sunday on Fox, it's very much the same thing. Like, he's still working and you could hear the delight with everybody that he works with. And a lot of people in the media, New York media, said it was the beginning of the end for John Tortorella when he snapped at Sam Rosen after losing to the Sabres in 2013 in the shortened season. Everybody just went, oh, okay, he's fired.
Yeah, I mean, Rosen and Davidson really, really could go down as one of the better announcing booths to ever, you know, broadcast for the NHL. Those two were really an incredible listen. I mean, they obviously were great friends off the, you know, outside the booth, and it really showed through their work. I mean, Davidson's hockey knowledge really was incredible, and they just complemented each other so well, either with enthusiasm or anger or excitement, and it really was a very, like you said, a very welcoming environment to people. And even through all those years, you know, when I was listening, when, you know, the Rangers were losing most of the time, it still never was a chore to turn on the game and listen to the two of them. And it's never like they, you know, they treated every game like it was still important.
And just going from our time watching the games, I mean, I was really first involved with the New York Rangers around 86, 87, 88. I started to like hockey. I wasn't as into hockey as what it was. 89, 90 was the first season that I became full-blown, red-blooded hockey fan that I bleeding blue everywhere. And I got to see Sam call a bunch of successful seasons. How he was able to still make 9-year gap of not making the playoffs tolerable was amazing, because, I mean, the 97-98 season might be just one of the worst for as far as a feeling for a Ranger fan, just because they lost Messier, he left. The highlight of that season was when Messier came back. I mean, sure, there were some great plays with Brian Leetch, but Sam was able to always keep it entertaining as well as informative, and that's what you always want from your play-by-play guy.
Yeah, and he's continuing to do that today, and really his longevity is something that you don't see too often. I mean, how many guys stay with one team this long and at the top of their game for so long, and, you know, I can't even imagine who's going to be the next Ranger play-by-play guy. It's going to be an awfully big job to try and fill.
Thank you, because I was going to bring that up just now. Because when you think about the list of people that could not supplant Mike Richter as a Rangers goaltender and now could not supplant Henrik Lundqvist as a Ranger goaltender, and those guys have only been on – were on the team for 10 let's see, for Richter it was, I think, 14 seasons. And with Lundqvist right now, he's on season 11, Kevin? Oh, man.
11. Okay. The lockout.
So
12, I think, right? 12? I don't know.
Yeah, all right.
I was told there would be no match.
Up the cup, folks. We don't need to really get too far into that. But this is the point that I was going to make. Just going from the Rangers TV broadcast, you get a John Giannone that steps in, does a good job. You get their radio announcer for a while was Howie Rose, Marv Albert, Kenny Albert right now.
God, Kenny Albert's so
you
good.
And Kenny Albert is fantastic. We've been able to interview them. So they got there's a very rich talent pool. For my money, if Sam ever retires or leaves us for any reason, hopefully he'll be immortal. And I would prefer Kenny to step in. But the Rangers can almost throw a dart at one of their guys and with a good announcer. And we obviously know Giannone's got the toughness to do it because he got hit in the face with a Mark Stahl puck just trying to call the game and didn't even break stride. Just Jim Ramsey just tending to his nose as he's still calling the game.
Yeah, that was a pretty gnarly picture. I forgot about that. Jesus.
But it's even better that he just so matter of fact says, yeah, Mark Stahl just hit me in the face with the fuck right there, guys. I'm okay, just to let you know.
Maybe when you compare Giannone to like the national guys, you know, Pierre Maguire, who's standing in that box, Giannone is worlds better than him. So, I mean, the Rangers broadcast on MSG really is one of the best. Like I said, if you watch the League Pass games, you can tell that it's one of the most professional, one of the most informative, and one of the best ones out there.
And we haven't even gotten to the studio guys, like Bill Pito, who was our guest on the last podcast for the worst interview he ever had to sit through in his life, and obviously the great Al Troutwig. But you also look at guys like Ron Duguay and Dave Maloney, who steps in every now and again, obviously the color analyst on the radio broadcast. And they're both fantastic. Steve Alliquette, incredibly informative with all the stats that he breaks down. I mean, he's breaking down stats that I didn't even think of. So
Alliquette also just has a really great way of using stats, but also showing video that helps explain what the stats are telling him. And that's really a level of analysis that you don't get in a lot of places.
No. More often than not, you just get, so why'd that shot miss? Because it didn't hit the net.
I mean, why'd that goal go in?
I mean, Pierre Maguire, look at Pierre. We don't need to know where everybody's junior team was every 5 seconds.
I'm waiting for the day where Pierre Maguire tells us who's someone's 12-year-old hockey team. I think we're going to get there pretty soon. You know, he's going to be talking about someone's Mite team one of these days. Oh, I used to watch him when he was a Mite up in Saskatchewan.
And see, hear that silence? That's exactly what we would get for Pierre Maguire. It would just be like, Pierre, what are we going to do with that information now?
My favorite thing about Pierre, though, is every time that he addresses the audience, the other people in the booth, he always refers to them as Doc and Eddie. As it's one word with just two syllables in it, or three syllables, you know, Doc and Eddie. Hey, Doc and Eddie. And then the two of them just sit there, don't say anything, and they're just like, and then, you know, Emmerich will just pick it up and go in a completely different direction as if he's not even talking to them at all. But he has to keep yelling at them, like, it's like that thing on Seinfeld when Jerry's like, my Uncle Leo, he's always grabbing me. It's like he's afraid I'm going to run away from him. Like, Pierre thinks if he keeps saying Doc and Eddie that they're going to talk back to him.
Well, all right, we're going to take another 2-minute break real quick. We're not going to play a full song, obviously. But we're going to step right back on in. talk more about tonight and what to expect for the next couple days.
And maybe I'll panic about the Chris Kreider injury. You never know.
I hope not. For us to panic for a minute, so I'm going to turn you over to the mayor of Panic City, Mr. Kevin Murray. What are your thoughts on Chris Kreider's injury?
I don't know what my thoughts are because I don't know what his injury is, and that's the problem. I mean, if I knew what his injury was and they could tell me, oh, he has a calf strain, he'll be out 5 weeks, or oh, he broke his finger, they're going to put it in a splint for a week and then he'll resume skating next week, that would be fine. He's literally just out for evaluation. We don't even know what part of the body is being evaluated. He played the other night. He looked fine. He was skating. I don't remember him taking any big hits. You know, what's going on? I don't know.
I think the one thing to say, at least, is because did he go back to New York?
I read one report that he was going back to New York, but I don't remember who I saw that from. It might have been from WFAN, but I don't recall, actually.
All right. Well, the one thing to say is if he did go back to New York, we can already probably take the word the dreaded C word out of everything. Nope, not the four letter one. The one I mean is concussion, which is the big one. And at least we don't have to worry about that. And if it's bone, if bones heal, if it's muscle, that can be a little bit more tricky.
Do we think it's the neck because he had a neck injury earlier? Like, do we think it's the neck? Is that what's going on here?
Well, as long as he could avoid neck surgery, that's fine. And also, God bless the length of a hockey season that he could literally, if he had to get neck surgery right now, he might not be done for the season. He might miss 2 or 3 months.
We'll talk about stuff like that. Like, he could be out a couple days, and obviously we're just panicking for no reason. But I'm just kind of curious as to why we're not going to get an update. I think they said they're not going to have an update for a day or two. I mean, like, what's he doing? They're going to put him in, like, a hyperbaric chamber for a couple days? Like, I don't understand.
Well,
there are doctors in Vancouver, right?
Well, they have a hyperbaric chamber in their locker room. We know about that from the Stanley Cup Finals years ago. But it could be worse. You could have back spasms like everyone else.
Yes, because back spasms are contagious now. The Rangers need to hire a new massage therapist, I think.
I mean, you look at that, you look at some of the injuries that are happening right now, and that's where I'm getting to the point that I was making before about having a good loss or a bad loss right now. You want it right now because you want the coaching staff to look at everything. Well, you want an injury right now because you don't want – because you want to test your depth. See whether or not the guys that are going to be here or that could fill in are going to do just fine. Oscar Lindbergh hasn't played much. The Rangers are probably going to utilize him. Cristobal Buñuel has been brought up, and he looked really good in the preseason. I mean, I'm not selling him for a Selke trophy yet, but he was a good two-way player. And if that's the case, try to see what those guys can do because Kreider will get healthy again. Butch Nevich will get healthy again. Kevin Klein, who had back spasms, as we were talking about before, he is healthy. So you want to see what those guys can always give you, so that way, especially when the trade deadline rolls around, you know what you've got and see whether or not you have to upgrade.
Yeah, I think the Rangers' depth is something that's definitely helping them out here. I mean, pretty much the whole season they've had two or three guys sitting out because of injury, like you said. Joris obviously is hurt again. He's skating, but in a non-contact jersey I was reading today, so hopefully he'll be back pretty soon. And Boone Evans is here, so we get to see, you know, it's always good to get to see your draft picks actually come up and, you know, hopefully get in some NHL games. I know I'm probably not the guy to talk to about how Hartford's doing. I don't really get a chance too often to watch them, but from everything I've read, you know, they've been having a little bit of a tough season, but he's been one of the brighter spots on the lineup.
Is it weird that sort of the philosophy I have with the minor leagues is I don't want to hear sometimes how the team is actually doing, because I've seen successful Ranger teams that couldn't import players up to be successful, but I've seen their unsuccessful teams have talent come up and then really kind of make notice and take shape. I really just care about what are these guys developing and can they contribute to the Rangers. Like, Marek Rivik is a good player and all, but he's a stopgap solution for about two or three days or two or three games, maybe 10 tops. If we had to rely on Marek Rivik, we might be down with the New York Islanders right now.
Yeah, Rivik to me is like a 4A kind of player. You know, he's too good for the minor leagues probably, but he's not good enough to be a consistent NHL player. And yeah, as you were saying with Hartford, like I don't watch, you know, I don't have a chance to really watch Hartford that often. And sometimes the team success really can be misleading because, you know, some of those Hartford teams are filled with, you know, 27 or 28-year-old guys that have just been playing in the NHL their whole career. And those are the teams that can be most successful. For the teams with the most talent that are kind of, you know, trying to build up their NHL teams are the ones that, you know, might not be doing so well in the standings. So it's kind of a weird dynamic of who actually, you know, is doing well down there. But I just hope that, you know, I hope Nieves can come in and just kind of hold his own, get some games under his belt. Because like I said, it's just really, you know, it's always exciting when you have one of your own draft picks actually get a chance. And the Evans kind of went through a little bit of a developmental hiccup, I know, when he was at Michigan. He didn't really put the puck in the net at all. And he was kind of starting to be written off as a bust. So it's nice to see him make this comeback and the Rangers actually be able to develop some of their own talent.
I think a lot of times the change of scenery usually helps. Sometimes it can hurt a little bit. Al Montoya was an example of that, where Al Montoya had a fantastic freshman season right before the Rangers drafted him. Had a bad sophomore season, then went to Hartford, was an AHL All-Star right away, and I think in the back of his mind he thought, yeah, you know what? They got the Swedish goaltender up in New York. He might not last that long. I might get my shot. And Al's still backing up everywhere now. So it's, I mean, talk about a guy that never really, you got to wonder what his career could have been like if he actually found a team that he was able to get a shot with. He's someone had a shot with the Islanders and the Jets, but that was about it. I mean, he's just the guy that backs up great goaltenders.
Yeah. I mean, he's gotten a couple chances where he's played 20 or 30 games, I think, and not, I mean, the more games he plays, the less great he looks. But kind of impressive that he's been able to hang around the league this long and keep a career going.
Yeah. Well, our co-analyst, on the very first podcast that I did with him, who is not here right now, Scott, I'm referring to you right now. First question he asked me, if it was about a guy that the Rangers acquired, and he thought, hey, this guy could be something. And I knew I watched this player, and it was Danny Christo, and he just didn't get that feeling that he was going to be a full-time NHL player. Now, what the hell do I know? I'm just some schmed that's doing a podcast, so it's one of those things where it's. I did say the same thing. I referred to a certain Norwegian player as D.A. Parento Part 2, and I have been so happy to be wrong. I cannot say that enough.
Yeah, it's tough with these guys. You don't know. Even when guys have been doing great at the AHL level, you don't know if they're going to make the jump. There's so many different things. I mean, we're not scouts. We don't know what's going on. I don't know how to analyze, you know, junior hockey numbers or AHL numbers. And some of it's just luck, and some of it's timing, and some of it's, you know, sometimes it's just, you know, it can be as simple as line mates, you know. Nieves could come up and really click with someone, and that could, you know, jumpstart his confidence. It's a lot of things that go into it.
Well, I think it's one of the things that even the scouts sometimes don't know what they're doing. How is every scout ever wrong about Patrick Stefan or Alexander Dieg or to the Rangers scouts? Let's go with Bobby Sanguinetti or well, there's been a lot of busts that we've had in the first round. Or Hugh Jessamine obviously is number one on our list. Like, what did,
well, you know,
what did
they drafted
see?
Him because he was tall. You know, that's why they drafted him. He was very tall. I don't know if you knew that about him. He was the huge specimen.
Yeah, he was a huge specimen. But, you know, they didn't know that the league was going to go in the direction that it did as well. And even to Hugh's credit, he didn't know his knee was going to give him so many problems. It's just, it is frustrating as a fan to say, I'm tied in goals scored for the New York Rangers with Hugh Jessamine, and he was a first-round draft pick.
Now, speaking of draft picks, while we're kind of tangentially on the subject, what do you think is the future for Dylan McIlrath now that he's in Florida? And apparently in practice for the Panthers, he's been paired with Keith Yandel. I guess they're trying to recreate some of that magic that they had last season. Do you see an NHL career for him? Did the Rangers mess this one up?
There was a statement about Ndamukong Suh that he's a great NFL football player, but he was just born at the wrong time. My correlation to Dylan McIlrath is Dylan McIlrath in the year 1998 would have been a fantastic draft pick for the New York Rangers. And I think really been on his way to being, especially playing with Ole Samuelson at that time, would have been fantastic. In the new NHL, I'm not sure if he fits. And I'd like to see him fit. I'd like nothing but the best for Dylan. Met him. I want to say it was game 5 at the versus the Flyers 14. Wonderful, nice young guy. And somebody, you know what? Some guys have it and can work their way in. Some people actually have to work their way in. And some of them work so hard that they'll never make it. I hope he's not the last one. I hope he's not the guy that's going to work so hard and then he never really makes it in the NHL. Maybe he's got a spot with Florida because they could use some physical punch And Gerard Gallant would probably like that a little bit better. I just don't know about Dylan.
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't know what he's going to turn into. I do know that last year when he was paired with Yandel, he did look his best, and that might just be because Yandel is really good at getting the puck out of the zone and maybe hit up some of his deficiencies better. But the only thing that I do know is the fact that he's a first-round pick from the New York Rangers. They invested years, time, development in him through injuries, different coaches, and they got back, I think, what's his name, Steve Kampfer? I don't know his first name. Mike Kampfer?
I think it was Steve Kampfer.
Steve Kampfer, right? Who the Rangers originally traded to Florida to make room to, you know, acquire Keith Yandel. So in a real circular logic, the Rangers are now back to where they started and have nothing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, can you talk, like, how does the front office mismanage an asset like this so badly? Like, couldn't they have played him at some point? Couldn't they have gotten something for him instead of just letting him wilt away? So they got, I mean, they got nothing for him. They really got nothing for him. Steve Kampfer's never playing for the Rangers. Ever. He's never playing
play,
for the Rangers.
He'll play slightly more than Chris Summers. Slightly less than Chris Summers. And the it's just when you get a guy like Dylan, that the knock on him was his skating. Jeff Guggenheim worked with him really well, and he was able to get his skating better. It just hasn't made that extra leap. And the other thing is, Dylan is a fighter, and fighting is sort of going the way of the dinosaur. Or, I mean, I guess right now maybe you could say the saber-toothed tiger. Maybe it's not quite the dinosaur. It's just it's one of those things of his greatest assets they don't really need, and he doesn't use that excellent shot enough. He's going to have to probably reinvent himself a little bit, maybe even drop some weight and really take some power skating classes. And there's been plenty of guys that have went in the first round that have reinvented themselves and been successful NHL players. And the one I'm going to point out is the 27th pick in the first round in 2003 was Brian Boyle. Brian Boyle was a bust in L.A., came to the Rangers, was a fourth-line center. He did okay. Then he took some power skating clinics, and since then he had a 20-goal season. He was a very capable third-line center, and he then – when it looked like with AB he was going to probably be on the way out, him and Dominic Moore established great chemistry, and it led the New York Rangers to a Stanley Cup Finals, and him to a huge contract and another Stanley Cup Finals in Tampa Bay. So it's not to say that the end is here for McElrath. We wish you all the best, Dylan. I hope you improve better than the way my voice has been cracking in the last 5 seconds.
Yeah, it's not so much about McElrath for me. I mean, I hope he has a career. I hope he figures it out. I definitely think he has enough skills that could lead to an NHL career. Also, fun fact about the Rangers right now, they're the only team in the NHL that does not have a fighting major. So, how about that this year?
I fully believe it.
Yeah, it's true. I'm telling you.
Fight. Maybe two.
Yeah, and
maybe
so
two,
far
maybe
none of their
three.
Players, you know. Now their players have been decapitated, so take that, fighting crowd, is all I have to say. But
well, we haven't played Radko Gudas yet, who wants to take a huge run at somebody.
Yeah. My thing with the McElrath situation, it's a little thing, but like I just feel like the organization as a whole messes up all of these little transactions sometimes. I mean, like, they traded Hagelin for Emerson Edom, and they traded Emerson Edom for nothing. They invested a first-round pick and all this time and energy into Dylan McElrath, and they got nothing for him. They, you know, they got Lee Stempniak, who they get lost for nothing. And then, you know, it turned out, you know, he might not have been this terrible hockey player that should have been getting sat all the time. It just seems like whenever they have these, like, little decisions to make, they seem to flub them. And I know that's not the, you know, decision that's going to win or lose the Rangers the Cup, and it's not worth, you know, harping on too much. Which is something that, I don't know, like, they seem to mess up the easy calls. Like, why can't they just get the easy decisions a little bit, make them a little better? Like, when organizations are run well, you know, all these.
Yandel, that's why they get rid of Stempniak.
Excuse me?
They went for it with Keith Yandel. They had to make room for the salary cap. That's why I think they had to get rid of Stepniak.
Well, they could have got rid of Tanner Glass. That was when people still thought he was tough and good. They could have traded him.
Yeah, well.
But no, they had to scratch Stepniak for Glass to put in his two goals that year. You know,
you might be seeing your favorite player soon.
I know. If we have one more injury, I'm gonna be on serious like lookout for. I was really a little worried yesterday. Actually, I was like, oh no. I was like, we're gonna see Tanner tomorrow, aren't we? But thank God, we're still an injury away. So.
All right. Well, we're gonna take a quick 1 minute break, maybe 90 seconds, and then we're gonna set up for Vancouver tonight, as well as. Look ahead for the next week. Whether or not he's doing all right. Scott had to rush to the hospital. We're hoping everything's fine with him.
Freak accident.
So we are thinking about you, Scott. No, not during special time. We're just thinking about you just in general. And so looking ahead next week for the New York Rangers or for the next, starting with tonight, you got Vancouver. You can't take them lightly. They mentioned who's starting goal. Is it Miller or is it Markstrom?
Excuse me. Sorry, I missed that.
Do you know if it's Miller or Markstrom in net tonight?
I don't know exactly. I can check, though. Find out.
Yeah. Sure. Well, you look at what we mentioned before what the Rangers did last week when we were at the game, and that was they played into Vancouver's lack of speed, I guess you want to call it. Vancouver slowed them down. You know what? You beat us on our ice. Let's beat you on yours. That's all we have to do with that. Friday night, Columbus Blue Jackets, as I mentioned before, the second best goal differential in the Atlantic Division. Right now, they're playing pretty well. I think that they guys just want to get those standings, give you their last 10. They're 6-2-2 in their last 10, 7-4-2 overall. Of course, the guys are playing well, so. 5-2 at home for the majority of the games have been. Rangers got to show up. You know what? But they've done on everyone else's ice. Why not do it here? And
yes, and it will be Markstrom and goal tonight.
That guy. It's one of those moments of, you know, those goalies that you just run into and you just look up and say, oh. Fuck me. We got to play this guy. Ben Bishop was always number one, and the Rangers lit him up earlier in the year. But then, you're looking at Jacob Markstrom, even all the way back to his Florida days, he just always had the Rangers number, and it drives me crazy. And you're like, why? This guy can't get a hold of himself in the NHL. All right, so hopefully the Rangers can settle the score with him. Looking ahead to Sunday, 5 o'clock start at the Garden. Florida Panthers, who are starting to pick up some steam. I mean, they're 4-6 in their last 10. Would you call this the biggest disappointment in the Eastern Conference?
Not yet. I think a lot of people were – I don't know if I was on the Florida bandwagon as much as everyone else. I thought that Tampa was still the best team in that division. I guess just by default.
And still might be.
I mean, the Islanders – them and the Islanders, I guess, are the most disappointing team so far.
All right. And then, of course, the first and two of the back-to-backs at Pittsburgh Monday night. We're going to be talking about this game next Tuesday. We're going to be talking about the following game next – the following Tuesday, probably before the Carolina game or whatever our next podcast is going to be. But it's – I think that's the biggest series to tell the Rangers where they are right now. And they're going to need it. They're going to need it a lot to try to figure out where this team is, how they're going to attack Pittsburgh, because that's going to be one of the two teams. You know you're seeing Pittsburgh, Washington in the playoffs if you advance.
Yeah, and that first game is going to be a little tough for the Rangers because they're playing the back-to-back with Florida and Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh gets a day off on Sunday before they play the Rangers on Monday, even though they will be playing the Islanders on Friday and the Buffalo on Saturday. They'll be a little more rested, but yeah, it's going to be a real measuring stick, those three games right in a row, and then the Black Friday matchup against the Flyers. It's going to be a tough week, or a tougher week than maybe we've seen.
Hey, if you don't mind me asking, because we got 4 minutes, I want to just throw this question out there real quick. Do you think a lot of people are sleeping on Ottawa?
I think Ottawa's
that
not
a better
that great.
Team,
I would disagree. Right. I don't think so, but I mean, I just don't have
even
the depth.
A goal differential. I agree with you. It's just one of those things. Maybe that's one of those early season anomalies. Speaking about which, with the Ottawa Senators, that on the 27th, they will be coming to the Garden, and I can guarantee there should be a nice ovation for Derek Brassard that's there.
All
right.
Absolutely.
So we got 3 minutes left, Kev. Would you say – I should have done my research on this and had it all mapped out. But who would be your three stars top of your head for the last 3 weeks that we've been out?
For the 3 weeks we've been out, I guess the third star – well, the first star has got to be Michael Grabner. I mean, the fact is the guy has just been – scoring goals like crazy, and even if it doesn't continue the whole year, the guy early on has really been one of the bright spots of the Rangers forward depth. I'd say the second star would have to be Rick Nash. Rick Nash is really, we haven't talked about him at all tonight, but he has done everything this year. He has been great defensively, he's been great on the penalty kill, he has been great in the offensive zone, he has really just been great. He's a total 200-foot player. I mean, when we got Rick Nash, I thought he was going to be, this big goal scorer, and he has been at times for the Rangers, but the 200-foot game that he's played has really been something I never expected from him. It's been something that I don't think enough Ranger fans appreciate all the time. And then the third star, I'm going to give it to Ryan McDonagh, just because even though his play slipped a little bit over the past few games, he's really in an incredibly tough spot, being the number one defenseman on a team with no number two defenseman and having to play all the big minutes every game. And that's just something that, always amazes me about him.
All right, since we got 90 seconds left, I'll give you my three. I'm going to agree with you. Michael Grabner is number one. He's especially highlighting the hat trick against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Probably right after that, as much as I would want to agree with Rick Nash, I got to give it to Kevin Hayes right now. He had that point scoring streak in the middle of this, and he's been playing well. Kind of went a little bit stagnant the last week, but that's all right. And Just to be different, I'm going to give the third star to Pavel Buchnevich, who came on with 4 goals and 2 assists in the last week of play. But you know what? This is what this team is. It's got a lot of depth, and they're going to be tough to play against, because you're going to have to figure out which line you're going to try to keep out from putting the puck out of the net. And that's why I still think Brendan Peary is going to be a huge part of this team. All right, so we got 30 seconds left. What are you looking at this week?
I am looking at lots of LSAT studying. That's what I'm looking at.
All right, good. I'm looking at just trying to enjoy the blue shirts. All right, guys, we'll see you for our next podcast soon. I'm Mark from All Things Rangers, and Kevin from All Things Rangers too. Thank you very much for joining us. Talk to you soon.